Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse here, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. We will be here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Yeah, it's cold outside, but it's warm inside the clubhouse. We have the latest on the lockout from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, who is on top of every issue. We will talk about the Cubs and the White Sox and the impact of their international signings. We will remember a dear friend this week. We lost Les Grobstein, and we will talk about it all here if you stay with us until 11 o'clock. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, it's been a very difficult week for all of us, all the listeners, all the people that loved our dear friend Les Grobstein, and we will pay tribute to Les here and encourage your phone calls at 312-644-6767. In the meantime, David, we'll talk about the CBA and the proposal that will be looked at this week by both the players and the owners. We will talk about the Hall of Fame, which will be this week. The vote will be given early this week on MLB Network, and we will find out if there is anybody else going into the Hall of Fame from the players who have been retired for at least 5 years and have been on the ballot and are on the ballot right now. So we will get into all that and all the issues in baseball that you want to talk about. We are here for you.
Bruce, it seems like we should start with the big news in the game, and that is the meeting on Monday, the first face-to-face meeting since the lockout began. It almost feels perfunctory to start a baseball show talking about the fact they're not – there is no baseball, not because of the schedule, but because of the lockout, and there can't be any trades, there can't be anything, any contact, and that's the unfortunate part of this offseason. But here we are, and this is what the reality is, and they meet again, or they meet for the first time Monday, face-to-face. I want to get your sense of talking to people and just your experience of your level of optimism. It has been presented this way. The owners, I think it depends on who's writing the story and that point of view, depending on where the onus lies and maybe the responsibility is for finding a compromise beginning Monday. What is at stake? How optimistic are you, Bruce? And what remains the biggest hurdle to clear?
Well, you know, the proposal was made last week by Major League Baseball to the players. The meeting didn't last long. They took the proposal, and now this is a counter proposal by the players. So initially, the owners looked at offering a new compensation structure for players between the 2 and 3 year level. Those are the super two players rather than 3 year arbitration. They wanted to offer something in the area of performance-based system based on WAR and other statistical formulas. Players in the MLB right now are allowed to go into the arbitration system, David, if they're in the top 22% of service time for two-year players. The players want more than that. New draft rules were offered by the owners as well, as far as how the draft takes place, if there's a lottery system coming up as well. And also more things, 14 teams in the playoffs, allowing a DH in both leagues, and competitive balance tax, which seems to be, in my mind, the biggest issue out there. The players are going to counter, David, and the counter is going to be they're still going to go for their issues first. They want five-year free agency. That seems to be a non-starter altogether. Salary arbitration, they want a higher percentage of the two-year-plus players eligible. Right now, as we said, it's 22% of the two-plus players that have service time right now that are eligible for arbitration. Revenue sharing is huge for the players. They want revenue sharing downgraded. They don't want as much revenue sharing. The revenue sharing is all about to the players that teams in the smaller markets get the money and are tanking and putting that money in their pockets, not spending it. And competitive balance tax, the offer from the owners will be somewhere between 214 and 220 per year as far as the payroll and tax afterwards. The players want it at 245. So we will see a counteroffer, David.
Okay.
I want to get your thoughts on exactly what you think is the major issues here, and what do you think? Where do you think a deal might lie?
Well, I think that's almost there's so many details to be ironed out that there's so much minutia to work through. I think obviously the free agency issue is going to be huge, and they have to close some ground there. I know the Super 2 eligibility, the things that people who are just watching the games, they don't want to hear about, but those are the things when you talk about the three core components that have been part of the CBA for so long: the free agency, you know, eligibility issue, the Super 2 eligibility issue, and the revenue sharing agreement. Now, those are things that MLB and owners have been asked to move off of, and I just don't know if they're going to, because they have been clear in negotiations to this point that those are non-starters. So I don't know how meeting face-to-face will make a change in that, Bruce, but I do think this, not to spend all show on this or all segment on this, but so much about these lockouts and work stoppages and labor disagreements is about messaging. And I find it interesting how the MLB.com story about this kind of posed it as what were non-starters and what were, you know, areas, and the way that it was presented was almost like the onus is on the players' union to come to take a step in their direction. And you read Ken Rosenthal, for instance, who I think is as objective and authoritative of a source on this as they come. We're going to talk to him at 10 o'clock. He said not a single game should be missed, and seemed to place the onus more on the owners and MLB. And I think it depends on how they're able to control this message and get it out there, and how they're who blinks first. But I don't know if I'm any more optimistic than I was before they scheduled this meeting. I still think that we're looking at mid-February before we get anything, you know, in the way of a potential compromise. And I think we're going to have some, you know, disappointing or discouraging news coming out of Monday's meeting.
Well, I choose to be more optimistic. I believe that that a deal can get done in early February here. Now, I really think after this is bruised and looked at, look, here's the great news. If you're a listener and you have no feeling one way or the other about this, here's what I'll tell you you should be enthused about. For the first time since December 2nd, when the lockout was imposed, the owners and the players will meet in person in New York. The last meeting was a Zoom meeting where the owners gave their proposal to the players. This is head-to-head. People in the same spot, same office in Midtown New York. And what's encouraging about this, David, is it shouldn't take either side very long to turn around both ideas of the owners and the players and start going, we will now know the major issues for both, okay? You know, this is the time where they've cut to the chase and come up with the major issues. Everything else will be handled pretty easily. But these are the major issues right now. We'll hear from the players their major issues. I think 2 or 3 days tops, maybe not even that long, before
okay.
they should be they before the before they should be able to sit down again. No reason for anybody to leave New York, okay? They're there, okay? Time to get a deal done. I believe optimistically that they will start negotiating these real issues and come up with some type of plan. Because, David, spring training is scheduled to start in mid-January.
I know.
You're going to start pissing off fans. You do not want to do that. You do not want to do that with fans who have not had attendance in 2020 at all. Partial attendance last year from mid-year on. And people squabbling about $11 billion a year and how to divide it up. You just don't want to do that. You do not want to poke the bear on this one. I guarantee you, when we have Ken Rosenthal on at the top of the next hour, he will talk about this as well, that baseball and baseball leaders on both sides should pay attention to the game and what's going on with the game right now and keeping fans interested. This is the last thing that they need to do is start losing games in Arizona and games in Florida, messing around with spring training in the beginning of the season.
Well put, Bruce. Strong stuff. Okay, we want to keep it moving because it's inside the clubhouse, not inside the boardroom. So let me ask you a couple baseball thoughts on things that have happened this week. We saw a headline, Carlos Correa changes agents to Scott Boras. We saw another headline, Dylan Cease changes agents to Scott Boras. How do you interpret both of those moves and how they potentially affect the White Sox and or the Cubs?
Well, I think that, Boras is, believe it or not, gaining ground again with the top players in the game. Why? Scott Boras is involved in these negotiations, okay, between the owners and the players. He is a lead man along with Tony Clark, who's the union head. But Boras has taken control along with this lawyer they hired named Bruce Meyer. And his profile is higher now than it's ever been in the history of Major League Baseball. Players are paying attention to him. They're hearing from him. He's around. His presence is felt. And a lot of them who are going to be in the shoes of Dylan Cease or right now presently in the midst of negotiations as soon as this is solved for Correa, they want to get as much money as they can, and they want to be secure. Scott Boras is an avenue to that. And therefore, they're stepping aside. With Correa, you know, they were asking 10 years and $300 million, $300 million plus. I believe that the creativity of a Scott Boras is intoxicating to some of these players when they talk to him. And I believe he talks to them about them directly and the plan that he has for them already. Probably sat down with both of them and had a book about 30 pages thick about how to get the most for Dylan Cease, how to get the most for Carlos Correa, and why they are the best players in baseball. So that is the way that Boras goes about it. And there is a shift because he's already had some of the highest profile players over the last 35 years. He's going to continue to be one of the most powerful people in the game.
I envisioned Carlos Correa picking up the phone and calling Scott Boras and saying, "Hey, Scott, there's this guy in Chicago that says I could have a creative deal, 7 years with some opt-outs. His name's Bruce Levine. He says that I could really make it happen with the Cubs. Now, I'm hiring you. You need to make it happen. I need to listen to Bruce." Do you think it went like that?
I doubt it. I seriously doubt that my name was brought up or that he's looking for a 7-year deal. I think that within the framework of the deal that you and I talked about on this show a few weeks ago, we did talk about making him the highest paid player in baseball. Okay. Right. I think people's ears will perk up a little bit if you hear, "Yeah, I'm going to be the highest paid player in baseball for the next 2 years. And at age 29, I'm going to be able to walk away and get another 10-year deal for $35 to $40 million a year."
Bruce, last week we talked a lot about it was the beginning of the international signing period. We made a big deal about the White Sox and Oscar Colas, $2.7 million, I believe, is what it cost them for his services or his rights. Why have they not announced anything? Yeah. Why have they not announced anything?
They are still kicking the tires. This is, I've been told by sources that there's no problem with this. there's still some minutiae to get figured out here and signed. The White Sox international scouting director, Marco Patti, is on top of this situation, and we will hear an announcement pretty soon on Colas. But they are not giving any, even our sources are not giving us any strong direction as to why it wasn't announced up until now. But we do believe that the $2.7 million deal for him will be announced pretty soon.
But no reason again, for concern?
No. Okay. Hold no reason for concern at all. It's just the minutia. Again, this is a player. And we'll talk to Luis Alhawa about this, the international director for the Cubs, about some of the difficulties of signing some international players, especially guys like Colas, who have not played major, have not played any competitive baseball since 2019. Believe it or not, you know. I mean, you go back to when Epstein and Hoyer came here, and they had, and they signed Jorge Soler to the first free agent contract, the international free agent contract. He hadn't played for 2 years when they signed him. So all those, some of these players like Colas and Soler, they are just in showcases for scouts and general managers over that period of time. Also adjusting to the new life in the United States after coming from another country, after leaving Cuba. So there's some real complications, especially when you sign a Cuban player.
And Bruce, I imagine the baseball gods laughing at this next story, because as we know, everybody listens to the scores and cares about sports in Chicago. Now, we lost a dear friend, Les Grabstein, 69 years old, passed away Sunday night. We want to hear your remembrances, 312-644-6767, about Les and baseball and his beloved Cubs and the White Sox and his days at delivering you his opinions and his information. But, Bruce, this was the perfect story this week. Robot umpires were given the nod in AAA. Next year, robot umpires are going to be one step away from the major leagues. And all I thought about was, when I saw the headline, what would Les think? How would Les rail on this? What would the rant sound like? Because we know where his stance and what he felt about robot umpires. And here we are. Pretty close, Bruce. This was a significant development, I think, because places like in Charlotte, where the White Sox AAA affiliate is, and other outlets and affiliates, they're going to experiment with the automated ball and strike zone. And so I think that's significant, and you wonder where it's headed and how far away it will be. Even though people are against it, you wonder how far away we are to having robot umpires in Major League Baseball games.
I'm getting a transmission from Les, and he says it sucks, and it freebases, okay? Les's two favorite comments when he begins a rant, okay? That was our dear friend and colleague Les Grabstein's way of dealing with issues like robotic umpires, metrics, and the wave, okay? Those are some of his favorite rants, and we will go back, and I'm hoping that we incorporate some of Les's material, because it was unique. It was special to him, but I think in honor of him, David, we should come back with the bum of the week as a segment on our
back.
Show.
We should bring the bum of the week back.
So when the season starts, we will go to the bum of the week, and in honor of Les. But you know, in reality, here's how the robotic umpires work. Because a lot of people go, wait, there's going to be a robotic machine behind home plate. He's going to raise his robotic arms and signal strike or ball or yell it out through a automated system. There'll be a sensor. This has already been tried in the minor leagues at the Atlantic in the Atlantic
yeah.
League,
mm-hmm.
and in a low A minor league. This year, as you mentioned to begin the show, AAA teams will be using this as a model for calling balls and strikes, including the Charlotte Knights of the White Sox AAA affiliate. So what happens is there's a sensor over home plate. The sensor senses whether it's a ball or a strike, okay? It immediately sends a audio file recording to the umpire who has his iPhone and an earpiece in, okay, and it relates to the umpire ball or strike, and he somehow dramatically signals ball or strike, even though it's not his call. He is the conduit for this information. So this is how it's going to go. I don't know what the umpire does when the machine isn't working properly. We're going to find out. Maybe there's a lot of non-calls. It's going to be interesting. But now that it's at the highest level of the minor leagues, people should pay attention, David.
Yes.
This isn't far away. This experiment might go for a year or two, and then you might see it in the major leagues in a year or two as a common way that umpires call balls and strikes.
Think of your hot prospect when he gets to the AAA level. You start to think about what is he going to look like in a major league stadium, in a ballpark. And I think, likewise, you better get prepared for the robot umpire in Wrigley Field or Guaranteed Rate Field. And these are the realities you have to consider, whether you like it or not, whether Les would have hated it, or all the things that you can imagine him saying. Yeah, it's coming, and we better be ready for it. And you better be ready to share your remembrances. 312-644-6767. We want to hear what you think about maybe robot umpires, what you think about the lockout. We want to hear what you'll miss most about Les Grobstein. We will honor a friend. We'll talk about his famous rant he coaxed out of Lee Elia or was there to record. We'll hear part of the Paul Konerko interview earlier this week with Danny Parkins. You want to stay with us? We got Ken Rosenthal next hour. A lot of great stuff ahead on Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
These so-called fans that come out here and say they're Cub fans that are supposed to be behind you, ripping every thing you do. I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter than just to stuff it up than 3,000 people that show up every day. Because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dave Hoffman's mind until 11 o'clock. And yeah, you've heard that before. You've heard the rest of it many times. It is epic. It is one of the greatest rants all time in sports history from 1983. Lee Elia. Les Grobstein, of course, the only person in that room along with Mark Giangreco, but Les had his recorder going, as he always did, Bruce, and that was a big part of grieving and processing this week, remembering the moments like that, that Les was part of in his unique way, in his authentic style. And let me just say this, we're getting some phone calls, we're getting a lot of texts, but I have to say this about you, one of his closest friends in the business, and this week, you rose to the occasion in paying tribute to a dear friend and somebody we're all going to miss. But I know it was difficult for you to write what you wrote on 670 The Score, which was beautiful, and to say what you said at his funeral on Thursday, which was eloquent. You did your dear friend justice by the way that you said goodbye to him, David Schuster, Mitch Rosen, his family. It was tremendous tribute, and we heard and saw and felt all of the love that was in Chicago for Les Grobstein. So well done, my friend.
Yeah, thank you very much, David. There's a lot to be humble about in paying tribute to a beautiful guy like Les Grobstein, because he was a friend first and a colleague right there. And, you know, the colleague part morphed into friendship for 40 years. And the things that we shared together and the love for sports and the passion that we both had for it was something that I found in Les that made me love the guy. And I always will. And I think all of his listeners and the people that listened to Les over the last 50 years, not 40 years, but 50 years, feel the same way about Les. That they didn't lose somebody overnight that just entertained them. They lost a friend and a family member, and that's the difference here. There's been wonderful overnight hosts in Chicago history. You know, tremendous ones like Eddie Schwartz, Pierre Andre, Franklin McCormick, going back into the 50s and 60s. But nobody shared as much of themselves. They're truly who they were, and the same type of passion that they had and respected the fans the way that Les did. It was total love fest every night between them, whether they were screaming and yelling at each other like dogs and cats, or whether they were just getting through the night together. As you heard the intro, you know, from the Rolling Stones, "Let's Spend the Night Together." That was Les. And
he connected with that audience. And we heard from many of those listeners all week, Bruce, but this audience, this 9 to 11 Saturday morning baseball-only audience, is maybe didn't get a chance to share what they remember or want to remember and share about Les. So let's hear from some of them now. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start the conversation with our buddy Ron on the South Side. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having the show. I haven't been able to get in. Both of y'all used the word buddy, friend. Last time I talked to him, last time I was called, he would say long-time Score guy, because I've been with it from day one. But we don't even say long-time friend. 2001, Les got in touch with me. He said, Ryan, Milwaukee has this new stadium open. Would you like to go with me, be my guest? I said, certainly. At that time, I was coaching my 10-year-old son in Little League. So I said, Les, is it possible, you know, I can bring my son? He says, oh, certainly, Ryan. And it just to show how nice he was, well, you know, I'll just meet you and then I'll drive. So he's already providing the tickets, and he's driving, and it was one of the most wonderful. After you talk to a person all night, they talk about the how intimate radio is, and I would talk to him during the night, but to actually be in his company, I will never forget. I called my son. My wife remembers it, so I loved him, and every time when that's what he referred to, he didn't refer to me as a caller. He referred to me as his friend, and he was my friend. Thanks, guys. I love and will always love Les Grossi, me and my son, actually, and my wife, because of that, the kindness. And he treated me like that all the time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for sharing that, Ron. Wow, Bruce, that's quite a tribute.
Very powerful. And Ron, who is a frequent caller to the Score over the many years, it's not just the callers. So the essence of Score callers, I want to hit on, especially with the way that Les treated them. He treated them as friends. He treated them with tremendous respect. All of our hosts do, but not to the level of Les spending the whole night with them, giving them 15 minutes at times to talk sports. The difference of a talk show host on the Score and Les was that Les had thousands of co-hosts, and they were all his listeners. And that was the beauty of his show, which was so fascinating to me when I'd listen, because you would really get the thoughts of the guy sitting next to you on a bar stool. You would really have listened to the passion. You would really hear Les go off on people and eventually say, that's it, you're done, you know, when they break bad on him. And that was the beauty of
talk this, to you later in the week.
but nobody did a show like Les. Nobody right. Connected with people like Les. And that was a perfect avenue for him. When Mitch Rosen came up with the idea to put Les in overnights in 2009, it started a change of how the Score did business and how it morphed into your show and Mully's show, and at the time, Brian Hanley's show. And it just changed the course of history for radio, and Les was a big part of it.
Without a doubt. Let's go to Bob, who's in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Morning, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I found your guys' show last summer. You know, the Score comes in like it's local here. And, you know, I heard Les at night, but when I first heard him, he did a baseball syndicated show with Bill Hazen, and then they would go and have tapes of that gal that played the organ for the White Sox.
Yeah. And Nancy Faust, right.
Right, right. And that was a neat program. My one high school friend who's blind, you know, we talk about that a lot because they used to have that show and syndicated in Des Moines. And, of course, Bill Hazen, you know, did Stadiums USA, too. Now, I wanted to ask you guys a question. I'm a Royals fan, and I wanted to find out, is Chicago a Cubs town or a White Sox town?
David, that's all yours, buddy.
Well, I think, obviously, thanks for the phone call, Doug, or Bob, I appreciate it. You know, I think if it's sheer numbers, it's Cubs. They're obviously it's easy to answer that one. It depends on the year, certainly, but I think definitely there are more Cub fans than White Sox fans, but I'm not sure that they're any louder. Small but mighty bunch.
I'll answer it this way for me. There's a different passion from each fan base, and they're both equally enjoyable to hear and see in action. But there's no confusing the two. When you are at Guaranteed Rate, you know you're at Guaranteed Rate. When you're at Wrigley, you know you're at Wrigley because of the fans. Okay, you know there are different sounds. There are different ways they express themselves. There's different lead-ins by the organist. It's a whole different experience, and I think anybody who would go back to back one to the other would be able to delineate and figure out exactly what I'm talking about.
I think definitely they're very distinct, different cultures, and I think you put that very well, Bruce. In fact, so well, I would like to contribute to your campaign because it was very.
I am running for office, and running for mayor. Although I'm a big supporter of our local government, I will consider if asked.
Let's go to Doug in Kankakee. Good morning, Doug. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Thank you for having me. Great show, guys. I really appreciate, Bruce, what you did at the funeral services. I was in tears when you and Mitch and the others, Jaron Greco was there too in the back. The eloquent words put me to tears, really. I go all the way back in 1979, coming into Sox Park, interviewing at the Illinois Institute of Technology for a job as an assistant professor, and that's when I first heard about this marvelous man, Les Grubstein, who was such a baseball fan. I just could not get enough of him. I would call in from 12 to 5 in the morning on my way back from IID because as an assistant professor, I got to get the publications out and, you know, to get tenure. And there was Les was something to distract me from my lab, which was baseball. I love baseball since Little League. And then I learned that he knows everything about the Oakland Athletics. I went to school at the University of Arizona Wildcats. He knew the basketball coach, everything about the baseball coach. I was in heaven to have somebody to talk to, being from Arizona for so long. So over the phone, he accepted my phone call numerous times, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed talking to him science about robotics, about the COVID problem. He was so knowledgeable about metrics and books that I've read about metrics, same books. And I thank you, Bruce, for keeping Bum of the Week. You guys are doing a fabulous job. I hope they put you both together for an upcoming show if you can get 670 The Score's permission on that.
Thanks for the phone call.
I think we're doing it today. Aren't we doing it today, David?
Yeah,
and David was, of course, at the funeral, as a lot of our Score teammates were there in support of Les and his family and Kathy, and it was a beautiful service, and very happy was streamed so that all of his friends and listeners could also watch.
And before we break, Bruce, to share one of those stories at the funeral his sister told about Les and about things that we may not know. I thought it was such an image that's hard to you're always gonna I'm always gonna think about this and Les's love for baseball, which we heard for 50 years on the air, but before he was you know, privy to an audience, had that kind of access. He was a kid who would go to Wrigley Field, and he would get free tickets by helping them clean up, and he would the seats and put the seats away and get the free ticket and go back the next day and bring his tape recorder and record himself play by play. And one day, a family member went to get Les at the game, was asking the usher, I believe it was, and she said, "Oh, the kid with the have you seen the kid with the tape recorder?" And they knew exactly who they were talking about, because there was little Les lugging a tape recorder around Wrigley Field before anybody really wanted to hear what he had to say, telling everybody what was happening. And that, to me, when you have a kid at that age knows what he wants to do, he was meant for this business. And when we heard, you know, obviously what he did once he got here.
Well, I'll have more stories to share when we come back from the break, and we'll hear from Paul Canerico, who was on with Danny Parsons, about way that he looked at the Elia thing, and the way that he dealt with Les Grabstein as well.
And how interested he was in that recorder. We will hear that story and interview next. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, Inside the Clubhouse.
I appreciate you having me on, and I will always talk about the Elia rant anytime I'm asked. So I'm here for it. So thank you for having me on, and rest in peace, Les.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. That was the familiar voice of Paul Konerko, who spoke to Danny Parkins, Parkins and Spiegel Show, on Thursday. And he was paying his tribute to Les Grabstein, who he had a relationship with that I'm not sure a lot of people were aware of. But Bruce, you sure were, because you were involved in trying to work out some sort of deal. We'll hear what else he had to say, but Paul Konerko, very interested and fascinated with Les's recorder that was used to record that famous rant that we heard early in the program.
Yeah, actually, it was the combination. He wanted the microphone. He wanted that microphone that was involved in the Ely thing. So the story starts with Konerko, you know, the year that he was going to retire, and it started, David, with me saying, well, you know, what do you want to keep? What do you want to get to remember your career? And, you know, how can we help in the media? Because Paul, as you know, was one of the greatest people to deal with for media people. He would talk at length to everybody and give you 100% every time. So, you know, I said, hey, we'd like to, you know, help you with something. He said, you want to help? I would want Les Grabstein's microphone, and if you want, throw in the recorder. I want that as a keepsake, because ever since I heard that tape when I was a young kid, it always made me laugh. It always made me smile. It always gave me a perspective that baseball was a game, but it was a game that people were passionate about and earned their living in, and nothing told me more about that than the way Elia responded that day about the fans defending his team from being booed at home in April of 1983. So at that point, I went on to talk to Les. I called Les and I said, look, Canerico wants that microphone. What kind of deal can we get? He goes, well, I don't know if I want to part with it. So he hemmed and hawed. I had to ask him a second time. Finally, he said to me, to be honest with you, I have so many microphones here. I don't know if I can identify the right one, and I wouldn't want to put him in that situation. I can identify the era I use these microphones, and it would be in 1983, but I can't necessarily identify the one. And I went back to Paul, and I said, he said, well, you know, I'm still interested in the circa of, you know, that microphone, and I'd want it. And I said, well, how much does Les want? And I said, well, Les hasn't told me what he wants for it. Went back and forth with both of them for a while. Bob Bechtel, the White Sox, you know, the great media relations director there, got involved too and had some fun with it. But it never came to fruition. But it was the one wish that Paul Konerko did have, was to have that microphone. And as the family went through some of Les's belongings this week, they found the reel-to-reel and the original cassette tape of of the Elia Rand. So that's something that they were happy to be able to find. And what they do with it, I don't know. I just got a text from Scott Grobstein, his son, and he thanked us for talking about Les right now. His message to you is, listening now, headed up to his place, meaning Les's place. You and David are amazing. Thank you, Bruce and David. So really nice from Scott Grabstein.
That's nice to hear. Les's, and certainly a place in Cooperstown or maybe the Smithsonian for Les's...
Or Paul Canerco's rec room.
And this is Paul Canerco, what he had to say himself in his words when he talked to Danny Parkins on Thursday about his fascination with this recording.
He was just doing his job, but I mean, it really is, like, to me, like, it's like the Zapruder film and like the JFK assassination. It's like, it's like it's such a famous piece of like evidence that this really happened. So I was always asking him questions like, now tell me, like, where were you standing? You know, like, I really tried to have him describe the situation to me, because again, it's just a classic. I think, you know, anybody who's ever, certainly I'm sure, managed or coached a major sports team, but players as well, I mean, you can just feel that what Lee Elia went through that day and what he was saying and all that stuff is just like, you want to do that so many times, you know, like you want to just let loose and just let people have it. And I was, you know, I found out, and when you first listen to it, I'm sure everybody's the same way. When you first listen to it, there's no doubt there's this general feeling that he's generalizing the whole entire, you know, fan base and everybody in it. But the more you learn about it and you find out that it was more of a specific situation, I think, that happened with a couple players that day and a couple fans that, you know, I guess made contact and reached over the wall and grabbed one of his players. There was more to it than what it sounded like, but in any event, it's still awesome. And it's just amazing. I just listened to it again, like 10 minutes ago before we got on, because I hadn't listened to it in probably about a year. And it's just amazing to me how many expressions in that 3 minutes that now are in my life permanently that I use.
That's great. And then, Bruce, he went on to talk about, you mentioned your role as the quasi broker. You're not only running for office, you are moonlighting as a broker here. And he alluded to his offer to buy Les's microphone.
Well, I mean, a blank check, I feel like, is an offer, you know, like I was like, man, just let me know what you want for it. But he was still using that, you know, that apparatus, I'll call it, you know, he was still using it. And it was kind of like one of those things like, all right, maybe down the line. But, you know, I mean, really, that thing should be in the Smithsonian, to be honest with you.
Bruce, do you think he's still got some interest in it? Do you think that it's still something that is, you know, Paul Canerco?
I know Scott and the family, if they ever do part with some of these things, they want to legitimize it and make sure that it's factual, the exact items and things like that. So, you know, They're wonderful people. They're not looking to make a quick buck off of Les's life and his career collection, and it's vast. That was not the only thing that Les saved, you know, as you can imagine. So they have a lot of work ahead of them to go through Les's place and find all those meaningful things to them and what were meaningful to Les. My hat's off to Scott and Holly and the family. It should be an interesting treasure hunt over the next few weeks.
And just in case they find that exact microphone or they find the recording and they want to do business with Paul Canerco or just connect the two, Paul Canerco talked about looking into buying that microphone.
I will look into that. I am not a memorabilia person, but I will tell you that, again, that one thing, because it's just a great, thing to have. And like I said, like if someone's like, what is that? You say, well, let me play this for you. And you right. can say, that right there was recorded on this thing here. And, you know, I was talking to Bob with the White Sox, as you know, before I came on, and I was like, we were talking about the famous rants of all time, whether it's like the Bobby Knight one with one of his players or Tommy Lasorda has had a few of them. And I'm like, well, what guy out there in the world right now is about to get on a radio show and do an interview about one that happened almost 40 years ago? So to me, there's none of them that come close to, you know, what this was, you know.
That was Paul Konerko earlier this week with Danny Parkins.
I have Scott and the family looking for the Pat Piper tapes. Pat Piper was the PA announcer for the Cubs going back into the 20s. He was there 50 years. Before there was electric sound, he would go around the ballpark with a megaphone and announce the lineups up and down the first and third base line. Les did extensive interviews with Pat Piper, who he became friends with literally as a young kid, as a high schooler. And I begged Les to find it. He said, well, it's somewhere. And it's like, Les, come on. He says, well, I don't know where it is, but I'll keep looking for it. And that conversation between me and Les went on for about 20 years. So I'm hoping that Scott and Holly and the family find those tapes, because those truly do belong in the Hall of Fame. With Pat Piper and the history that he had with the Chicago Cubs.
Thank you so much, everyone, for sharing your thoughts on Les, calls and texts this hour. We're going to shift gears now. When we come back, Ken Rosenthal is the foremost authority on many things in terms of baseball coverage. He is with The Athletic, and he will join us here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you can win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Casino.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.